are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, March 28th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the great Ari Berman from Mother Jones Magazine on how Trump is rigging the census. Also on the program today, China claims North Korea prepared to denuclearize the North Korea, or I should say the Korean Peninsula. That, folks, is what we call the laying of the trap. Supreme Court to hear another gerrymander case, this one out of Maryland. And Scott Walker's attempt to delay the special election in Wisconsin smacked down again in a federal court. 12 states sue Donald Trump administration over that census. And Steven Crowder cancels a show over the number of yellow M&Ms in his green room and blames the libs. Your app is about to break the law, ladies and gentlemen. And a court filing, Trump's deputy campaign manager, Rick Gates, knowingly was in contact with Russian spy. Protests in Sacramento over the killing of Stephon Clark, while the killers, police officers both, of Alton Sterling in Louisiana, don't even get charges. Lastly, a new study says 1 million people are out of the workforce as of 2015 because of opioids. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. A couple of house cleaning notes. One, I want to say thank you to a bunch of people. In the wake of our hitting over 250,000 subscribers on YouTube, obviously want to thank old Matt, but the person who really juiced us, who set us on a trajectory, who changed the angle of our trajectory, if you will. Like, you know, we were sort of going like this, and we're going like this, of course, was old Kelly, or not old Kelly. Just
I don't
regular,
think she would like that moniker.
Regular Kelly. Regular, classic Kelly. Let's put it that way.
I thought you were going to say George Soros.
Well, and then, of course, it's George Soros. And the other little dirty secret about our YouTube is not just our viewers, but also, I probably shouldn't say this, but we're involved in a collusionary relationship with Google, obviously pumped by George Soros.
I just wanted to say, let me just thank our community.
You can do that in a moment, but I'm trying to get to the heart of the matter. We were involved in, of course, silencing right-wing voices on YouTube. We did this through some back channels that we have here. Nothing, untoward and completely, we should say, completely opaque.
Totally unprompted.
And we were able to silence many, many of our critics. People, in fact, we had a whole list. We didn't even know half the people on there. It was basically more or less like, do you want these guys gone? And we would just be like, yes, because
check,
we could.
Check a box.
We called it Operation Shh.
Right, exactly. And here's the thing that I found, that when you have this power, you just feel like, why not use it? And so we shut down a lot of right-wing things. We, of course, demonetized all of Dave Rubin's interviews for just a period of time when it was fun. And it just got a little boring because he kept tweeting about it so much that it got annoying. And then simultaneously, every time we silenced a right winger, we were given extra subscriptions from those people. So we actually like sucked, like we, it would be almost like like a vampire, right? Like we would suck the blood out of them, and then it would sort of make us stronger.
It's actually cool.
No, yeah, no, the whole process.
The
we
bots.
Actually, we have a one of those, what do you call it? One of those decks. What do they call that when you make those in for businesses when you show PowerPoint? We have a PowerPoint about the whole thing. And of course, it's incredibly secret.
You know what
and
I love is every time you're looking for something like that, I pause because I think you're reaching for something like obscure and complex. I'm like, you mean a. Like a SWOT analysis? Like, where are you going? And then you're just like, PowerPoint.
PowerPoint. Yeah. PowerPoint. I mean, in the context like of my life, PowerPoint's pretty obscure. The only time that we do that is when we're outlining, you know, sort of the...
When we're colluding with Google.
Yeah.
Sorry. Just, I don't know why we're saying all this publicly.
Yeah. No, this is probably not appropriate for us to do. Anyways, I wanted to say that and to thank all of our viewers who, you know... We're thanking our viewers just as cover. So to make it seem like that's why we got those views.
I want to say thank our community, which right. by which I mean YouTube moderators and Mexican bots.
Thanks, Eric.
I also want to just do a shout out to the universe. Thank you so much for allowing me to turn on Twitter and see that Sam Harris is having a fight both with Glenn Greenwald and Ezra Klein at the same time. Because that was... It really, actually, the amazing thing is that for all his work as a new atheist, when I saw that, I thought, oh, my God, there is a God. And because only God would have given me the gift of watching Sam Harris get into a fight. Now, look, in some respects, I'm maybe, you know, in some issues, I think I'm more aligned with Glenn Greenwald, and there's aspects of his career that I really appreciate more than Ezra Klein's. But in some respects, I think, you know, probably on some questions, I agree with Ezra Klein. But these two guys, in terms of demeanor, really, like, run the gamut in terms of, like, I don't think I've ever seen Ezra Klein get into a Twitter fight. And even in his exchange with Sam Harris, it was like...
Saintly.
It was sort of like watching a Canadian interact with an American. And and yet, Sam Harris had, like, a total meltdown.
You know what it was? It was like watching somebody who... actually is, for better and for worse, what Sam Harris postures to be interacting yes. with somebody who's a mental case.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That was actually, that's exactly right. Sam Harris met the projection of who Sam Harris pretends to be. Yes. And when he met him in that alley, he turned into a lunatic. So I just wanted to thank Sam Harris and God. For that, because I really enjoyed it. So, all right, we're going to play a video. We got to take a quick break. We'll pick up Ari Berman. He's got a big piece out today, timed with the one of the announcements of the Trump administration on the census, really designed to create an undercount of the census. And the implications of that are pretty huge. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. I ran into Galaxy 500 again the other day by chance, and now I haven't been able to get it out of my head. Ladies and gentlemen, it is always a pleasure to welcome back to the program a senior reporter from Mother Jones Magazine, Ari Berman, here to discuss his recently released piece, in fact, today, Hidden Figures, How Donald Trump is Rigging the Census. Hello, Ari. Welcome back to the program.
Hey, Sam. Thank you for having me back.
It is always a pleasure, Ari. And, you know, your beat, really, for the past, I don't know, half dozen years has been on voting rights. And you, of course, wrote I believe, if it wasn't best-selling, it should have been best-selling, a book on...
If it wasn't, it will be now.
It will be now on... what is it? Give Me the Vote? I forgot.
Give Us the Ballot.
Give Us the Ballot.
It was so great you couldn't remember the title.
No, you know how many books I come across my desk, but I reference that book very often. So, but you're writing about the census. Were you anticipating this question or the announcement of this question by the Trump administration? Tell us what the question is.
Yeah, I was anticipating this. So the Trump administration decided on Monday night they would add a question about U.S. citizenship to the census form, which is just one question, but it's an absolutely enormous deal because this question about citizenship has not been asked by the census since 1950. So it hasn't been asked for basically 70 years. And it's never been asked when we've had such an anti-immigrant president like Donald Trump. So no immigrant, I think, citizen or non-citizen, is going to voluntarily want to give their immigration status to the Trump administration for fear that that's going to be used to try to deport them. And so this is a major issue. And I began looking into the census well before this, because the census for quite a while has been under a huge threat by Trump. I began hearing rumbles about this last year. The budget's been cut. They're moving to the internet instead of using paper forms. Their director resigned last May, the same day James Comey was fired. So there was all of these issues. They tried to put an expert on Republican gerrymandering to run the census. That backfired.
That was Thomas Brunell. We'll talk about that because that guy is hilarious.
Anyway, I know this is all stuff we could talk about individually. But the point is, the census was facing essentially unprecedented issues going into the 2020 census. And then now you have this question about citizenship that I think is going to blow up the entire census. I think we are facing, for the first time in modern U.S. history, the prospect of a failed census. And I tried to lay out in my piece what that means, why it's so important. Because I think a lot of people know that there is a census, but I don't think people know what it does. They don't realize, for example, that $765 billion in federal funding is allocated based on the census for literally every program. That the census forms the basis for how districts are drawn. That the census determines how many electoral votes each state receives. And that certain people, particularly people of color and immigrants, are always missed by the census for one reason or another. And that risk of an undercount is huge now. If there's a big undercount of people of color, of immigrants, that means that those states where they live, places like California and New York, for example, they're at risk of losing billions of dollars of funding and a lot of political power as a result.
Okay. All right. So let's back up just for a moment. The census, is this something that the United States undertook because, hey, it's a good idea to count people? I mean, how fundamental? Because I don't think people realize this. And you used to hear, conservatives talk about, we're going to get rid of the Commerce Department. Well, the most important thing the Commerce Department actually does is the census. And this is, and I don't think most people understand this, it is constitutionally mandated, and it's not a mandate to count citizens, is it?
No, it's not. It's been done every year since 1790. It's one of the oldest and most important constitutional mandates in this country. We need to know who lives here for so many different purposes. It forms the basis for how districts are drawn. It forms the basis for how funding is allocated. It forms the districts for every single institution in America. Talk to any businessman. Talk to any leader. Talk to any president of a university. Talk to any military general. They'll tell you how important census data is for understanding their populations. And so this is something that we've done every 10 years, and it the census calls for an actual enumeration of the population, meaning everyone who lives here, whether they're a citizen or a non-citizen, counts. And I've noticed a lot of discussion in the last day where conservatives have been like, why? That's ridiculous. Why would we count citizens? They're here illegally. And they don't understand. We've been doing it since 1790. This is what the Constitution says. We have to know who lives here so we can make all sorts of decisions, from who gets to be represented to who gets funding as a result. And so if we suddenly decide that, number one, we just don't count immigrants at all, we're not going to know who lives here. But number two, if we decide to then just count citizens for purposes of redistricting, which I think is a long-term plan that Republicans have here, that is going to be a massive, massive restructuring of what our democracy is supposed to do.
And I mean, I wonder about the constitutionality of asking a question or engaging in a practice in the course of trying to execute the census that one can reasonably know will inhibit the count. I mean, has the court addressed the constitutionality of something like that? I mean, we know, okay, now people can disagree. People can say, like, I don't like undocumented immigrants, so I don't care if they don't answer the census or whatnot. That's all well and good. But from a constitutional standpoint, there's a mandate to count every single person in the country. If the government engages in a practice that it knows will undercount, is that constitutional?
Well, we're going to find out, because 12 states have already said they're going to challenge this, and California has already filed suit against it. So this is going to be a huge political battle for the next few years. I don't think it is constitutional, and I don't think it's constitutional for a few different reasons. Number one is, I think this would sabotage the core mission of the census, which is to count everyone. Number two, this did not go through the proper protocol. So any new question for the census goes through rigorous, rigorous testing. If you want to change the census form at all, that's subject to years of analysis and focus groups and government research and all of those things. What the Trump administration did is, the Department of Justice asked for this question in December, and they had a deadline of March to then figure out if they wanted to add it, which is a ridiculously compressed timeline, way shorter than any other question that would be analyzed. Then they had this completely bogus rationale, which that they needed this information to enforce the Voting Rights Act, which is just the most laughable, total farce that I've ever heard. This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard the Trump administration say, because I'm serious, like, of all the stupid, ridiculous, and just completely wrong things the Trump administration says, the idea that they're suddenly interested in enforcing the Voting Rights Act is the most laughable. This is an administration that hasn't filed a single lawsuit to enforce the Voting Rights Act, that founded a commission that spread lies about voter fraud, that's staffed by people like Jeff Sessions, who have fought voting rights their entire life. So this is needed to enforce the Voting Rights Act is a complete farce.
But presumably, right, there's a subtitle to that explanation. We need this to enforce the Voting Rights Act because what? What data?
This is what they're claiming. So the census already asks about citizenship on what's called the longer American Community Survey. So there's a much longer census survey, not the every 10-year census, but it's called the American Community Survey, that happens on a rolling basis every year.
And you're not obligated to answer that in the way that you are obligated to answer the census.
No,
let's be clear.
Exactly.
One is an opt-in survey.
One is
the actual census.
Yeah, and it goes to 15% of the population. And they ask about citizenship there. And then that information is used to enforce the Voting Rights Act in terms of who are citizen and non-citizen voters. Nobody's ever had a problem with that. I haven't heard one civil rights lawyer ever say, hey, you know what? The American Constitution Survey isn't useful for voting rights implementation. We need this question asked on the full census. In fact, this came up 2 years ago when the Supreme Court heard a challenge that basically conservatives wanted districts to be drawn based on citizenship, not based on total population as it is now. And directors of the Census Bureau wrote in and they said any attempt to ask about citizenship on the census form will not only depress results, but it'll be inaccurate because people are just going to lie and say they're citizens. So there's no point in asking this on the full census form. So the subtext of why it was needed was so easily debunked. And I mean, you can read the whole 7-page memo that the Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross wrote. But this had nothing to do with the Voting Rights Act. This was about trying to, number one, depress responses among immigrants so that areas with immigrants get less power and economic resources. And number two, I think long-term, trying to be able to draw districts only based on citizens so that places like California and even Texas will get fewer resources and they will count less. And this is a way, as the country becomes more diverse, districts will instead become much more white if this scheme succeeds.
Okay, so in 2010, the 2010 census, it was determined that there was a huge undercount of people of color. How do we know that? I mean, what happened that we found that out a little bit later, and what are the implications of it?
We know that because the census goes and they do a survey after the fact to see how accurate they were. And the 2010 census actually was pretty accurate, but despite the fact that it was accurate, they found that white people were overcounted by nearly 1%, and they failed to count 1.5 million people of color, which included about, I forget the exact percentages, but a significant percentage of African Americans, of Latinos, and of Native Americans. And what that meant is that those areas received less federal funding, they received less representation. Places like California, for example, lost out on billions of dollars in federal funding because their populations weren't counted. So you have states essentially that are more diverse, that have more immigrants, that have more young people, that have more people of color. If they're not counted correctly, they're going to get fewer resources and representation than places that have that are more homogenous, that are older, that are whiter, for example. So that's why it matters, that the count forms the basis for how so much stuff is done in the country, that if the count is wrong, certain places are going to be penalized more than others.
Okay, so let's talk about the sort of the various, and I think in your piece you quoted, and I can't remember who it was, is basically saying, like, this is the perfect storm in terms of all of the challenges that the census is facing. And they all seem to be either challenges that have been created by neglect or just outright malfeasance. You've got budget cuts enacted by the Trump administration, and the Bureau had to cancel field tests in 2017 and 2018. What does that mean?
What it means is that anytime the census does anything, they have to test it. So they have to test, for example, the questions they're going to ask. They have to test how they're going to do the full test. The full run in 2020 has to be tweaked, and it needs to be tweaked every 10 years because different people live in areas. There's different technology they use. Things have changed between the decades, and so
we need to know how long it takes to send someone around a neighborhood.
We need to know if we're going to find every house, for example, which is the big problem. The biggest reason why people aren't counted is because the Census Bureau doesn't know where they live, not because they don't respond to the form. And so the tests were specifically designed to try to reach what's known as hard-to-count populations. So they were going to go to Native American reservations, for example, in North and South Dakota and Washington State, because Native Americans are among the most undercounted people. My story takes place in Fresno, California, because that's another place that has a lot of immigrants, a lot of people of color, and the census tends to not do as well in counting those neighborhoods as they do in counting whiter and more prosperous areas. So these tests are super important, and the census had to cancel all of their tests. So they're only doing one test before the 2020 census, one test in Providence, Rhode Island. I just talked to the Rhode Island Secretary of State, who's a Latino elected official, Nellie Gurbea. She told me she hasn't heard anything from the Census Bureau about this test. So even one of the highest ranking officials in Rhode Island doesn't even seem to know about this test. And the question about citizenship won't even be on the test. So they're not even going to know. So Wilbur Ross keeps saying, Well, we won't know the impact of this question. Well, the very reason why they won't know the impact of this
is because they're not testing it.
Because it was added so late that you couldn't test it. It's such a diabolical scheme. And so essentially what we're going to do is we're going to send millions of households a new question that hasn't been tested before, that's going to take place amid unprecedented levels of fear among immigrants. And not only that, but the census is going to move from being on paper to being online. So everyone's going to be told essentially go fill out the census online as well. Well, in the era of Russian hacking, in the era of so many people skeptical, Facebook, Cambridge Analytica, I don't think people are going to want to fill out the form online. And particularly, I don't think they're going to trust the Trump administration to keep their data secure. So all of these things are the subtext to the problems the census is facing.
I want to just circle back to the online thing, but I also feel like I can't help myself but to express what that what one of those dudes in Rhode Island's going to say when they finally get this, and it's going to be something to the effect of like, oh, "Dude, this ain't going to work." all right, so let me ask you this. 200,000 fewer enumerators, what does that mean?
So basically what the census does is if you don't initially respond to your census form, they send someone out to knock on your door.
What is the normal rate? Like, well, how does that normally work? Okay, so they send out the letter. I remember getting this.
Yeah.
And you fill it out. What's the usual rate of return?
The usual rate of return is about 75%, but it's been going down every year. So apparently it was 63% in 2010, and now they think it's going to go down to 55% of people initially filling out the form. This was before the citizenship question was added. So
now,
who knows at this point?
And wait a second. And so you're also relying on people to have internet access to respond to this. And my sense is that once you get to a certain income level, most of that internet access is via the phone, and that's a much harder thing to fill out, I would imagine, on your phone than it would be on, let's say, a computer.
Yeah, so what they're going to do is they're going to mail people a postcard and they're going to tell them to fill it out online. And basically, if you don't fill it online, someone will come knock on their door, but there will be fewer people to knock on their door. But then you also raise the important issue that it's one thing to like send an email on your phone. It's another thing to do like a 10-minute confidential survey on your phone. And I think that people are not going to want to fill out something like the census on their mobile phones, if they even have this, because what I notice is, first off, there's a digital divide, that it's very clear about a third of African Americans and Latinos don't have desktop computers or internet at home. Now, even if they have internet on their phones, there's a big divide between how much money you have and your connectivity. So even you know, if you look, for example, at the data, there's a big disparity between people who, for example, make over $100,000 and people who make under $30,000 in terms of whether they even have a cell phone that's connected to the internet. So I think there's going to be a lot of issues with it. Even in a perfect world, if all the political environment were fine, there were going to be people that were going to be unwilling to fill this out online. Now you add this question about citizenship with Trump running the census, and I just think that every problem that already existed is going to be compounded.
Okay, and so what is the drop off in terms of enumerators? I mean, 200,000 fewer enumerators. How many? Because I think if people weren't sort of like, if you're not conscious, and I just so happened, you know. I'm on radio, I'm talking about jobs and this and that. The number of people involved in the census is massive. Well, give us a sense of how many enumerators there are. So when we see 200,000, how much of a percentage drop off does that represent?
It's a major drop off. There were going to be, I mean, I don't know the percentages offhand, but if you just look at the numbers, there were like over, I'll just look at it up. I'll look it up right now, actually. There were 500,000 enumerators in 2010, and there's an estimated 300,000 in 2020.
So that's now, almost a 50%, I mean, a 40% a cut. That's stunning.
It's a major decline because they were projecting, first off, that more people were going to respond to the form online, which I don't think is true. And then they were going to try to verify people through administrative records and other things like that. But if you're already a hard count individual who, for example, lives in a neighborhood that you don't, the government doesn't have their addresses accurately, then they're not going to be on administrative records and other things like that. The census did just get a funding increase finally by the Congress after years and years of budget cuts. The Congress just gave the census a $1 billion funding increase. I think that funding increase has been almost totally negated by the new citizenship question. Whatever they were going to try to spend to make the census more efficient, they're going to have to try to spend convincing people to even fill out the census in the first place. And my feeling is Trump doesn't want people to fill out the census. So I just think that no amount of money is going to remedy the political problem that we have here of the administration deliberately trying to sabotage the census for political purposes and people not trusting the Trump administration with their data. I don't know how you get beyond that. What I'm hearing anecdotally from people after the citizenship question is tons and tons of people are saying they're not going to respond to the census form or they're going to skip this question. And then not only that, but what's happened in years past. For example, Latino groups have had what they've called trusted messengers to try to get the message out about why it's important to respond to the census. So like there was a storyline on Univision about on a telenovela about like why it was important to respond to the census. They made one of the characters a census worker. Are they going to do that now under Trump? Is Telemundo going to volunteer to promote the census under Trump? I mean, as someone told me, the trusted messengers themselves don't trust the message anymore, and that's the problem.
I mean, people also, I mean, there's a, and I want to remind people that we have hundreds of thousands of people who registered under the DACA program and essentially found that what they were doing was just giving ICE directions to their home, essentially, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
So the level of trust amongst various communities, I mean, never mind just immigrant communities. I mean, I don't think it would be that hard, frankly, to find, you know, white suburban people who are like, I don't know if I feel comfortable with the Trump administration in some respects. But certainly within the context of immigrant communities, you'd be facing an uphill battle anyways, I think.
You are already facing an uphill battle. What I learned when I was in California, in the Central Valley, in the Fresno area, talking to Latino immigrants was, first off, a lot of them had just never received a census form to begin with. So even if they wanted to fill out the census form, they never got one. And then they heard a lot of stories about people who didn't want to fill out the form if they had received one. And then I asked them, would you respond to the form if it included a question about citizenship? And I didn't ask people whether they were documented or not, but virtually everyone told me they wouldn't fill out the form if it included that question about citizenship. And that was before this question was added, but it was almost unanimous in terms of people not trusting the Trump administration with their data. And so why would anyone voluntarily give this to the Trump administration? I think that's the big problem here. And I think the Trump administration obviously knew that this was going to be an issue. Trump's reelection campaign, before this decision was even made, sent out an email basically saying that this was common sense and blasting attorney generals for threatening to file suit against the citizenship question. So this is all about politics, I think. This is all about the Trump administration wanting to demonize immigrants, wanting to turn the census into a weapon of nativist resentment. And I think it's all about longer term Republicans wanting to exclude non-citizen, whether legal or undocumented, from counting towards political representation because they feel like that's one of the only ways they can maintain a majority in the face of really rapid demographic change.
I want to remind people, and you bring it up in your piece, that the first appointment that the Trump administration attempted to make to the census, to the Bureau as deputy director of the Census Bureau, was a guy named Thomas Brunell, who, and I'm not joking about this, wrote a book in 2008 called Redistricting and Representation, Why Competitive Elections Are Bad for America. That's not a joke. He ultimately had to drop out because he had absolutely no statistical background. Like usually you hire like someone who's a like professor of statistics or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Usually you hire a career Census Bureau official to essentially run the 2020, to run the census, to be deputy director of the Census Bureau. Right now we have a situation where, so he withdrew. There was a lot of pressure on him. Apparently Wilbur Ross wasn't that crazy about him. I have no faith anymore in Wilbur Ross, so I don't know what happened between the time that he tried to oust Thomas Brunell and add the citizenship question. It seems completely insane to me that you would decide that you didn't want someone with a Republican redistricting background to run the census, but then you wanted a question on citizenship on there, which is going to achieve the exact same ends as Thomas Brunell would have pushed for. So I think it's very contradictory in terms of what the Census Bureau is doing. But right now, they don't have a full-time leader. The head of the Census Bureau resigned in June. He actually said he was leaving the same day that James Comey was fired. So that was kind of overshadowed by the Comey news, but this was a big deal. And right now they have acting people in here, and the acting people have no stature. And one of the things we've heard is that they were overruled by Wilbur Ross. And I don't think it was even Wilbur Ross. I think it was the higher-ups in the Justice Department and the White House that made this decision. And so right now the lack of real leadership in the census means that it's so easy for the administration to politicize this process. And this, not to get too into the weeds here, but if you look at who else at the Census Bureau, one of the senior advisors to the Census Bureau is a former pollster for Kellyanne Conway. So, I mean, they've just basically taken like people from the RNC that know nothing about the census and have installed them at the Census Bureau. And so I just think there's unprecedented political interference taking place with the Census Bureau right now, even though this one guy, Thomas Brunell, had to withdraw.
Okay, so what, there's multiple lawsuits that are being filed. I think you said 12 states at this point have at least indicated that they're going to file suit. I think Eric Holder's outfit is going to plan to file suit. I'd be surprised if we didn't see other organizations file suit over this. Aside from the courts, because who knows with these guys, could there be an attempt by people to say, like, I'm not going to answer that citizen question. I'm a citizen, but I'm not going to answer that question, to essentially like keep it from drawing attention if you don't answer that question? Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do follow what you're saying. I mean, so there's already people that don't answer that question on the American Community Survey, for example, the smaller survey that's asked. I don't know how this would play out, because I think one of the things they want to do is they want to draw districts only based on citizens. So that if you don't answer you're a citizen, then does that mean you're not going to be counted when they go to draw the districts, even if you are a citizen? So there's just so many unanswered questions.
Does that question have to be resolved at the Supreme Court? Whether or not we're going to base districts based on citizens or voting citizens, for that matter, you know, as opposed to children. I mean,
it was already resolved by the Supreme Court. I mean, there was a unanimous decision 2 years ago where the Supreme Court said you draw districts based on total population, not on citizenship. Now, it wasn't a hard and fast rule. They didn't say that you could never do that, but they said that the scheme that they came up with in Texas wouldn't work. And so I think that the reason why they wanted to ask the citizenship question on the census was to try to do an end around that decision. And the same people that pushed for districts to be drawn just based on citizens were the same people that brought the legislation that gutted the Voting Rights Act. So, I mean, this is all just so transparent. I mean, the idea that they want this to enforce the Voting Rights Act is just so laughable. This is a long-term scheme by the Republican Party to try to insulate their majorities in the face of rapid demographic change and shifting political power. And this is the efforts to rig the census have to be seen along the same lines as the rampant gerrymandering we're seeing, the voter suppression we're seeing, the attempt to buy elections by conservative billionaires. It's all part of the same system of undermining democracy. The difference is that the census affects everything in democracy. It affects literally every part of our democracy. And so if you rig the census, there's no way to correct it, because it's like the underlying basis for everything else that happens. It only happens once every 10 years. And if you do it right, there do it wrong, there aren't any do-overs. There's no corrective mechanism. You can't redraw the census like you redraw a district if it's found unconstitutional. So that's why this is so serious. And if it gets screwed up, all that information is going to last till 2030. So I just think that this is a wonky issue. I know that it's hard to understand, but it's so important that we try to correct what's going wrong with the census. Otherwise, it's going to affect everything for the next decade.
This is, in many respects, the DNA the next 10 years of sort of the political organization of our country. Let me ask you this. I mean, if we're to see this in the context of all the other means that the Republicans have used, particularly over the past 10, 15 years, rollbacks of the Voting Rights Act, increased obstacles to voting, the rampant redistricting, the gerrymandering so severe that we're seeing state Supreme Courts as well as perhaps the federal Supreme Court roll these back. Is this what we're seeing with the census? Is this a function of Trump? Or is this simply Republicans part of their long-term project to diminish the number of people who vote?
It's both. I think it's part of a longer effort by Republicans to diminish the number of people who vote. But it's also Trump trying to particularly use the demonization of immigrants to achieve these ends. So I think if we had a different Republican, there would still be issues with the census, but it wouldn't be the same exact issues that we're seeing under Trump, where they are trying to weaponize nativist resentment and voter suppression for a very specific end. And so that's what worries me here, is that this is just beyond the usual voter suppression by Republicans. This is a whole nother level in terms of what they're trying to do here. And I think that's what distinguishes it from the other kinds of voter suppression we're seeing by Republicans. I think this is even worse because I think they're trying to achieve ends that I think even many Republicans would otherwise be uncomfortable with.
Ari Berman, senior reporter for Mother Jones Magazine on how Donald Trump is rigging the census. Always a pleasure, Ari. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks so much, Sam. I really appreciate it.
All right, we're going to link Ari's piece at majority.fm. You should check it out. Ari does some pretty amazing reporting and is, I think, as I stated earlier, incredibly knowledgeable when it comes to issues of voting. Give us the ballot, right? Is that what it was? Yeah. Read that book. I read it. I guess it's like now a year or two old. He wrote it to be published on the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. And I think like over the course of writing it, he just watched the full on frontal assault on the Voting Rights Act. The year escapes me now. I don't know if it was 2014 or 2012 or what, when the conservative Supreme Court basically pulled the guts out of the Voting Rights Act by saying that the preclearance formula that had been in place for decades and had been reauthorized by the Senate in 2007, the Republican-controlled Senate in 2007, was invalid because we had come so far in terms of racism. And literally months after the Supreme Court rolls back these preclearances, you see places like North Carolina, Texas, Illinois, Ohio, I think it is, other states and counties. New York has two counties that I think were covered under the preclearance provision. Then instituting voter ID laws and other laws to essentially suppress the vote. So much so that the Supreme Court, in some instances, reversed it and others didn't. But that's why you have a preclearance apparatus, because that way you stop them from doing it and you don't have to go to court to get them to reverse it. It's not an easy process. It's not a quick process. But it used to be that if you were one of these counties and or states that had a history of passing laws to prevent people who were not white from voting, then you had to go to the DOJ and say, is it okay if we institute this law or that law? And the DOJ would say, no or yes. And it basically just changed the burden of proof, which in sounds not like much, but in practice is huge. Anyways, that's where we are today. And I don't know. I got a piece right here from CNN about how the Supreme Court prepares for a right turn. This is from CNN. Since last October, the justices have issued only 17 signed decisions. That's the lowest number through the end of March for any session since John Roberts took office in 2005. That suggests a significant amount of discord on the court. Remember, Anthony Kennedy is 81. I think both Berger, Ginsburg and Ginsburg's in her 80s. We have two liberals in their 80s. And it turns out Neil Gorsuch is already, I guess, showing himself to be to the right of Antonin Scalia. Somewhere around Clarence Thomas, who is literally from another era. You know, back when people really appreciated a good Coke can pubic hair joke. Back from those days. What's that?
I still appreciate the joke.
No, you love that joke.
Yeah,
he does that. Michael does that like almost constantly. But
wait, hold on. Was actually what he did?
He
as a joke?
I don't know if it was a joke. It was.
I never heard that story conveyed that way. Like he was like, "Hey, here's my pubic hair and a Coke can."
That's just a joke.
This
that's
is some good like Don Rickles Hill. Material.
He said to Anita Hill, "Like, is that a pubic hair on my Coke can or something to that effect?"
People pass all sorts of messed up stuff as
people have different,
jokes.
You know, disgusting. The different people start with a different opening line.
I apologize for
kink
shaming,
gets
but
mad,
I'm not I don't approve
like,
of that.
Ooh, can't you take a joke?
Yeah, no soda shaming here.
Soda shaming.
Yeah,
I remain committed to kink shaming.
All right, let's just do one clip here. This is from Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She was at the press briefing yesterday. This is following the announcement of the inclusion of this question about citizenship, which it's the first time it will be included on the short form census, the one that you are compelled. That's the thing. You are compelled, period, as someone in the country to fill out the census, the short form, not the long form survey, which has asked about citizenship on a regular basis, but the short form, which is not asked about citizenship since 1950. And let's put that into context. That's before the Civil Rights Act. That is following World War II. We had a little bit of issues there with rounding up some people in this country. I don't know if you recall that. It was before the emancipation of a lot of people and before we had the data to understand really, the implications of asking that question. Remember, the Constitution of the United States requires the counting not of every citizen in the country, but of every person in the country. And so if you're asking a question that you know will inhibit an accurate count, it is unconstitutional. Here is Sarah Huckabee Sanders at the press briefing. Now, I want you all to sit down because I don't want you to freak out, but she may be telling a lie here.
This is a question that's been included in every census since 1965, with the exception of 2010 when it was removed. We've contained this question that's provided data that's necessary for the Department of Justice to protect voters and specifically to help us better comply with the Voting Rights Act, which is something that is important and a part of this process. And again, this is something that has been part of the census for decades and something that the Department Department of Commerce felt strongly needed to be included again.
Has there been any talk of trying to do some type of campaign or some other type of outreach to ensure that immigrants participate, so states like California, for instance, that have large immigrant populations are counted appropriately?
I'm not aware of the specifics, but I would refer you to the Department of Commerce.
Yeah. So in other words, I'm going to tell a lie, and then I'm going to put some frosting on that lie by pretending it's about the Voting Rights Act. And then I'm going to say I'm not aware of anything that would mitigate the damage that we intend to do by this, because why would we do it if we were going to mitigate the damage? So I would suggest that you ask somebody else that question.
And also, shame on her for stealing my vibe with that Peter Pan collar.
I was going to say, you guys are dressed exactly like Sarah Huckabee Sanders today.
Don't drag Peter Pan collars into this.
No. All right, folks, going to head into the fun half, wherein we're going to have fun.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it's going to be crazy.
Out of context.
Now, listen, here's the thing, and I'm not going to tell a lie. I did not wade too deeply into the Ezra Klein, Sam Harris kerfuffle.
But you took him out of context.
But.
Out of context.
But the idea of them having a fight, I have to say, I just find, I don't know why it makes me so giddy. But Michael will update me on the twists and turns in this argument that they're having. And we'll also do a deep dive into this horrible situation with Steven Crowder, where apparently he's been deplatformed by himself. He had an accidental deplatforming. Sometimes when you clean your platform, it goes off.
It's corruption of the highest order.
Corruption of the highest order. Also, we will play some other clips, some clips of protests that are taking place in outside of City Hall and in City Hall in Sacramento over the killing of Stephon Clark. Yesterday, it was announced, not wholly unrelated, that the two cops who shot Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge will be getting no charges. Again, when the Trump administration came in, one of the first things that Jeff Sessions did was basically say to cops around the country, and I don't know if basically it's, I mean, said to cops around the country, hey, all this stuff where the Department of Justice comes in and questions whether or not you guys are killing too many unarmed black people, that's over. We're done with that. You guys go back to regular order, do whatever you got to do to do whatever you got to do. And so there's not going to be, like we saw during the Obama administration, the Justice Department step in and go, what the hell? That's not happening. So we will cover that as well. We got to take a quick break. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. Folks, a reminder, this show relies on your support to continue. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. If you want the fun half, but you do not have the finances, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We will take care of you. We will lock no one out. We never will lock anyone out for financial reasons. I fired a couple of members in the past. There's been other reasons. Like sometimes if I don't like your attitude, if you're a member and you write to us and you have some type of specific type of complaint, it might trigger me. I'm not kidding. I might go full Sam Harris on you.
No, we've seen it.
And
I'll publish this exchange.
And I will. Exactly. Even I wouldn't do that. Sometimes I'd read.
No.
But
this exchange where I have a slow motion nervous breakdown.
That's right.
I'll publish without your permission.
Exactly. I'm only going to publish publish those things that are extremely embarrassing to me.
Yeah. Where a listener's like, hey, I have a guest recommendation. You're like, fuck you.
Never email again. Take me out of context. Guest recommendation. I want you to know this entire exchange is going up online. People are going to see how you asked me about a guest suggestion.
Honestly, if you find yourself in two tweets back to back, shitting on Ezra Klein and Glenn Greenwald, and you consider yourself of the left, particularly of the center left, right? I mean, because he's not like he's saying, like, I have a problem with Greenwald's libertarianism from a left critique, and a problem with Ezra Klein's liberalness from a market critique. No, it's like, it's literally like having an argument with your mirror on some level.
But the joke, oof. He can really tell his crack up with the line he used for Greenwald. It was sad.
All this and more on the fun half. Also, don't forget, today is Wednesday, which means yesterday was Tuesday, which means last night was TMBS.
Hello.
The Mohammed Ben Salman show.
There's a new solar panel farm in Riyadh. We talked about that. And then some new really innovative proposals that the prince has been sort of essentially trying to create a new solar panel and jetpacks.
Very, very so happy really, really to hear what they're doing with electric cars in Riyadh.
I'm excited.
Check it out on iTunes or on our YouTube channel. And, of course, Jamie's got her Patreon is burning up the interwebs because of her sideways look at Michael, sort of like a broadside against Michael.
Broadside.
On patreon.com/JamiePeck.
I guess you'll never know unless you read it.
There you go.
Is true or not.
There you go. Boom.
I'll never know.
This is sort of like Klein versus Harris. Except
I thought that was a 90s TV show reference for a
second. Yeah, I did too. That, I read for Klein versus Harris.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. 646-257-3920.